Speaking of a lion, I'm going to bring my co-host in. Here is Dr. Bruce Pay, brother of mine. For those of you who don't know, he's a 30-year-plus anaesthetist. He used to work in the helicopters in South Australia. He had a car accident in the country. He's probably saved your life. He also has been to several war zones as an anaesthetist and loads of other things. Incredibly community service minded. He's just a great Australian, really. And he went to Canberra to protest because he lost his job because he dared to question the narrative. And they tossed him in the clink for 6 days, solitary confinement. He won that case, but since then he's refused to shave his beard. How are you, Dr. Bruce Pay?
Good evening, Michael. What a great set of intro songs you had there. I'll be sending off for one of those USBs. Of
that's the top 10, man. And if you get the USB, which is like here, if you want any more songs, we'll send you the songs. You just stick them on your USB. We'll send you the videos too, so you can put them in people's TVs and bring up. But that's the top 10 from when we started. Yeah. And I think it's really uplifting. It's really great. But before we bring in our guests, how have you been?
Yeah, I've been really good. In fact, I was just thinking today how fabulous I feel despite the fact that I was up and down ladders and physically working all day yesterday doing things that a 60-year-old shouldn't do.
Oh, that's interesting because I think our guest is 60 as well. Now, I was at a gathering the other day and I was invited to do a speech, which I did. And afterwards, I met this gentleman, Craig, and he turned out that he also has been in the forces. I'll just read it out, actually, because I want to get this thing. So he's been in the Navy for 6 years. He was in the Army Reserve for 4.5 years. And then he became an Australian Federal Police Officer for 34 years. He retired in December 2022. And this is one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on, Bruce, because, as we know, you've had some interaction with the Australian Federal Police. And I'm just interested, after 32 years, when we bring him on, how's the culture of that police force changed from when he entered it 32 years ago to when he left? Anyway, let's bring him on. And it's great honor to have him on. Here he is. G'day, Craig. How are you going? I'm going to go down the bottom.
Very good, thanks. And likewise, it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Now, can we just say straight off, what made you join the police force from the beginning? What was the attraction to becoming a police officer?
Well, I always viewed police as people that help the community, and they are there for the safety of Australians. And that's why I joined, because being ex-military, that was the ethos there as well.
Was that your reason for joining the armed forces as well, to protect the country?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it's also something you do straight out of school. So, you know, it's the way I looked at it, I wanted to get a bit of, there's a quid pro quo. You know, you get a lot of experience out of it. You know, I had 3 overseas deployments with the Navy, and that was really good, you know, for my development.
Where did you go?
I went to, we did a Southeast Asia deployment. And then we did 2 RIMPACs. So RIMPAC means Rim of the Pacific.
Wow. Yeah. What, the entire thing?
No, it's basically, that's just the name of the exercise. You go over to Pearl Harbor and you island hop on the way over and come back via New Zealand and then home.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, so first off, and Bruce, feel free to jump in at any time. We will be asking questions of the audience later, and the questions are coming in now. But when you joined the Australian Federal Police Officer 32 years ago, and that's a chunk of time, how did it change?
Years
from
when,
34 years. How did it change from when you started to when you were leaving? How did the culture change, or didn't it change?
It's changed immensely. You know, you couldn't, if you walked in an AFP office now, you couldn't recognise it for what it was when I joined. I believe it's the woke and the leadership, the woke's crept in, you know, the leadership is now driven like a corporation that works for, you know, who, you know.
So you don't feel... you don't feel valued as an officer as maybe you did in the past, like the brotherhood is, the sense of brotherhood amongst the police has diminished?
No, well, certainly not amongst the majority, but the ones who woke up to what was going on, yeah, we're still friends. Mm. So, yeah, you lose a lot of friends. Correct.
What is the difference between the Australian Federal Police and the ordinary police service like VicPol?
The main difference is Federal Police are Australia-wide and State Police are confined to their state.
And so what sort of things would you be dealing with, like crimes or issues? What sort of issues would you be dealing with the Australian Federal Police?
Well, you know, you got your drug unit, you got your... You got similar things to the state police, but it's at a federal level. And you've got like fraud as an area. You've got protection where you look after the prime minister and other important people, including overseas representatives. And you've got confiscation of criminal assets and things like that.
Do you get on? Do they interact well with the state police forces? Or
I certainly did. I can't speak for everyone, but I certainly did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so as you moved towards retiring, you said you were injured, but towards the end you told me before that you felt like you were being bullied out of the force.
Yeah, well, when I went over, we went over to the Solomon Islands to because of the protests and the burning of Chinatown over there, and so we were sent over there and in a close protection point of view where we're protecting important people like prime ministers and whatever, and while we're over there, I was in the gym and I just overdid it with weights and hurt my AC joint.
Oh, so you weren't shot saving the Prime Minister's yeah. life or anything like that?
No, no, yeah, not as dramatic as that. You know, it's funny how many injuries come from training rather than real life situations where you're more prepared for what might happen.
Mm. Well, the other thing too is my real first interaction with Federal Police was when we went up to Canberra for the big protests. The chief commissioner of the Federal Police, I think he said there was 10,000 people there, and some of the more extreme members of our side says 2 million. But I think there was somewhere, I'm not sure, maybe 500,000, 600,000, 700,000. There was a lot of people. And
I reckon a million, yeah.
Yeah, there was. Were you there? Did you go?
No, but I saw the footage and
yeah, there was
they recorded how many extra cars went in on that weekend. So what we're talking about there is a lie. It's a lie. What the media reported, whoever reported the numbers were lying.
Yeah, well, we have reported it as disinformation. We're just waiting to hear back. Moving ahead, first off to thing, before we bring in what happened to Dr. Pei, the first thing, I've been traveling the country and interviewing people, and I've been doing these separate interviews of people who claim they were injured at that protest. I've had people have sunburned down half of their face. Some people have had to go back and had basically radiation therapy, and they were burnt under their skin, under their clothes, and I was severely burnt on a mild day, like in no time. It was incredible. I was redder than Bruce's upside down flag, and there was a belief that it was from these LRADs or some other weapon used against us. Now, if that's true, how could police officers be convinced to use weapons against ordinary Australians who were just there to protest, as is their right in our democracy?
You know, I think you'd probably agree with me that radiation weapons are a thing. They've been around since the 60s. So what's that, 80 years? So, one, they exist. So they can't deny they exist. Two, would a rogue government use it against their own people? Yes, they would. So there's your answer.
But it's not so much the people, it's as a police officer, don't you have some discretionary powers where you actually, or don't, doesn't that exist anymore? If you're told
well,
to do something.
Well, I don't understand how that could happen, to be honest. But see, this is, you got to remember the last 12 years I was an injured worker, so they only gave me a support position. I wasn't actually doing my sworn job, if you know what I mean. And I saw all these changes coming in and I thought, wow, you know. And I just can't understand how people could do that. I can't understand. To this day, I can't understand it. The only thing I could think of is they were, there's two things that could have happened here. Well, it could be both. One, they could have been told, well, this is a less than lethal weapon. So, you know, less than lethal weapons include OC spray, rubber bullets, as you have experienced, and it includes could include radiation weapons. I mean, obviously there'd be a lethal limit to it, but it could be made lethal. But the way they use them, less than lethal weapons, is they can be used against people because they're less than lethal. So they fall within that. So that's one. And two, they basically might have been briefed to say, look, that this is much less harmful than what it was, you know, that this is just to annoy them. And so they might have been briefed, the operators, this is just to annoy them. And the third thing is because of the divisiveness of the programming, the way the programming from the media and you know, police management and whatever, because of the divisiveness of that, is if you can see a group of people as less than human, you can pretty much tell people to do this to them and they'll do it. That's the other aspect. So if they are less than human... Nodding.
I saw you nodding to that, Bruce.
No, I'm just thinking. I got censured by the medical authorities for posting out the seven stages of genocide, and pointing out that othering, you know, singling out one group as not fully human or not worthy of humane treatment is about step number four. So I posted that out as one of my posts at one point, and I actually got an official complaint made against me, and I was told to explain myself to the medical board.
Yeah, I can certainly believe that because I was censored at work too.
Really? I explained myself all right. The explanation involved sex and travel, as we say.
What did you actually say to them, Bruce? I'm really interested. What did they reply back?
I won't use the exact words because they weren't polite, but I first of all said I'm not going to respond to an anonymous complaint. The accused always has the right to meet their accuser. I said that, number one. I said, number two, I stand 100% behind anything I've said anywhere at any time. Number three, I've been in medicine for 30 years, never had an unexpected death and never had a patient complaint. And number three, I'm not just going to follow orders and go along with the genocide and probably the greatest medical disaster in Australian history. Perhaps you and everyone else at APRA who's just following orders might want to think about whether you want to do that.
Well done.
Yeah. I'm just going to bring in thing you can hear that we've gone. There's an amazing thing happened today. I'll just bring it in as we're going. But what I'm more interested in is I find it hard to believe. I can understand some officers, like we saw that in Melbourne, you know, but I just truly believe that most people join the police force to serve the community. You might have a few that think I'm going to be corrupt or I'm going to kick heads. But I believe the majority of officers I've dealt with all my life, which is fairly decent, just either doing their job or, you know. But and then something changed in these 3 or 4 years where we saw people, the brutality reach a different level in the police force. Even say nothing to do with COVID, but that officer who tasered the grandmother in the nursing home twice.
Yep.
You know,
well, pepper sprayed the 70-year-old in the face after she was already on the ground.
Mm. Yeah, you know, we got the. Yeah, we've done
I think the less than human programming is responsible for all that.
Yeah. It's the Ash conformity experiments all over again. Yeah. You give somebody a uniform and an order and they'll follow it.
Yeah.
Yep.
But do you think, and we're only theorising here because we these people won't talk to us, although I have interviewed other officers who still have left literally when you did, Craig, but and they couldn't take it. But if these officers, like the ones that pushed over the grandmother and pepper sprayed her twice, and there's loads of people that left her there, if they went back to the cop shop, would they be welcomed in and cheered, or would there actually be a group of police that might go, "What the hell are you doing?"
Because I think the second thing, but more from a point of view of making the police look bad than concern for the grandma. And remember, people who didn't have the jab were called granny killers, and here they are, you know, doing or assaulting grandmas.
Yeah.
You could easily kill them at that age, you know.
For their safety.
For their safety.
Yeah.
For Ihre Sicherheit is the German expression. It's done for your safety.
And there's she's not alone. You know, I've interviewed several grandmothers all over Australia who've been accosted, and same as grandfathers. You know, they've been in Canberra. I'm trying to remember his name. It's like Les, a tiny, he's even smaller than me, so that must be really small, little Polish 74-year-old guy when we were first in the library car park, and the police were coming in and shoving women around, and he went up to meet them, and he ended up with a big cut on his forehead, and he was pepper sprayed so closely. He said it was here. He could actually see into the nozzle before they pepper sprayed him. Yeah. Surely this wouldn't be how you were trained.
No. Well, you know, I mean, obviously pepper spray is a less than lethal use of force option, but you'd only use it for an extreme safety type situation where either you or the people you work with are threatened by someone, physically threatened, or a member of the public is physically threatened by someone and you're trying to deter the attacker. So that's what it's for. It's not for, you know, the type of situation you've just described.
Right. We saw pepper spray used as an offensive weapon. Correct me if I'm wrong. Police SOP is you should distance and use it defensively, correct?
Yes. Well, it can be used offensively, but once again, it's in defence of other people.
We saw it being used to break up crowds by police who were charging them. It was used as an offensive weapon. And I've got to pick you slightly, Craig. You've said 2 or 3 times a less than lethal weapon, both regarding rubber bullets and pepper spray. I think the correct term is a less lethal weapon, not a less than lethal, because as we saw the old lady in the nursing home, who was pepper sprayed, fell over and died, broke a hip. And the lady who was pushed over, pepper sprayed. If you get pepper sprayed in the face and you fall over and hit your head, you can die. If you're like Paul and you're driving a truck when you get pepper sprayed, you can lose control and other people can die. And if you get shot with a rubber bullet, you know, a rubber bullet is as big as your fist. It can be aimed with precision. And there's certainly examples overseas where French and other police have deliberately targeted the eyes of protesters at short range with rubber bullets, which destroys the globe, gives you facial fractures. And again, you could fall over, hit your head and die. So people should not be under any illusions that tasers or pepper spray or rubber bullets are benign, non-lethal weapons. They're not as lethal as ballistic weapons, but they are not benign by any respect.
Totally agree. Totally agree. But I'm just using the terminology that we use when we're in the job. But yeah, totally agree. And remember how you're pointing out 10 points of what was it?
The seven stages of genocide.
Seven stages. Well, during the lockdown in Victoria, they used the 8 principles of torture as well.
The
other thing though is like moving forward solution based. Actually, first off, let's cover Bruce. So Bruce turned up, who was I'll get Bruce to say it because you were there. Tell us exactly what happened, Bruce. You turned up and they must have known it was you.
Yeah, you got to think so. So we at very short notice, I said, bugger it, I'm going to Canberra. So I got in my Land Cruiser and I drove all day and arrived in Canberra about 11 o'clock at night. Went to a small event the next day, a small protest at Parliament House. This is about a week before the big protests. And then I think it was on the Sunday, didn't have anything particular to do. So there was just a bunch of people at Camp Epic said, we're going down to the airport. The pollies are flying back in today. Why don't we drive down and show them our support? So I drove down to Canberra Airport, not in a convoy, not anything organised. There might have been one or two other people around me who are also going the same way, but it wasn't a convoy. And I was driving pretty slowly because the traffic was heavy and also because I have no idea where I was going, and I was getting directions from the guy in the left seat who was a retired Air Force officer, and frankly, I didn't trust his navigating skills, so I was going actually pretty slowly. And yeah, as we approached the airport, you know, a little slip road to turn off to the airport, the traffic slowed almost to a halt because, unbeknownst to us, the so-called traffic controllers were rushing to the area to block it off so us dirty protesters couldn't get in and show our faces to the politicians. But there was nothing actually set up. There was just one vehicle stopped, no signage visible, no beacons, no lights, no cones. And so I'm down to walking pace, and as I approached this vehicle, I thought I'm probably approaching a road accident or something. So I just tried to slip around this, what I thought was a tradies ute, by putting a couple of wheels up on the curb and driving slowly around it. And when I did that, I'm the volunteer fireman. That's how you get up to an accident scene, you know. Like,
yeah, I drive a Land Cruiser too.
Yeah, that's right. So out from behind this vehicle leapt this guy who I now know was a traffic controller, and you know, motioned to me to stop, which I did because literally I was doing like one mile an hour. And when I stopped, he took a couple of steps up to the front of my vehicle, waved his arm, shouted at me, and punched the bonnet. And he punched the bonnet so hard that he left a dent in it. And then he stayed to hang on. He was hanging onto the roof bar of my Land Cruiser and shouting at me. And I've got no idea what's going on, except within 10 or 20 seconds, an AFP car pulled up in front of me and 4 officers burst out of with lights going. And as it turned out, they had just completely fortuitously been 50 yards away watching this intersection for no particular reason. And by the way, these weren't general duties coppers. These were police that were assigned to the COVID management task force. Isn't that a coincidence? Anyway, they raced up to my car, burst out, and first officer came up to the window of my car, so I wound it down, and he just said through the window, "What are you doing? You almost hit that man. You almost ran him over. I was just there. I saw you." And I turned and I said, "No, that's not what happened." Anyway, cut a long story short, over the next half hour, there was a lot of police officers walking around talking on phones, at the end of which they decided that I had been driving dangerously, recklessly and furiously, that I had committed vehicular assault, that I'd committed aggravated assault, and as it turned out later, aggravated assault with a weapon being my vehicle, and that I'd committed actual bodily harm, because it turned out that the road worker, when he punched my vehicle, jarred his back. So honestly, it's just like this blur of what the hell's happening. And half an hour later, I'm in a paddy wagon getting driven off to the police station in Canberra, where I'm chucked in a cell for about 6 hours with nothing. You know, no shoes, no belt, no clock, no window, no nothing. And about 6 o'clock at night, I get taken down the front and presented up to the desk sergeant, who's this grizzled old guy who looks just like the triage sisters you see at the Royal Adelaide Hospital emergency on a Saturday night when you're drunk. In other words, not real friendly. And he just pushed this paperwork across the desk at me and said, there you go, sign that and you're out. And that was the police bail offering. And I read the police bail and it said that I agreed to leave Canberra and stop protesting. So I said, I don't agree to that. I'm not going to do that. I'm here to protest. That doesn't work for me. And he looked very surprised, because I take it not many people refuse to get out of the police lockup. So they put me back in the cell for a few more hours. Then they brought me out again and he'd made a few changes, but it basically said the same thing. I agree to go home and stop protesting. And I said, no, I don't agree to that. So I stayed in the cells over the night. And the next morning you see the magistrate, the judge for your bail hearing. And again, all I was offered at the bail hearing is that you will go home and stop protesting. And I said, no, I won't. So they put me in jail. And they transported me to the real jail. So you get booked into the jail and you get given your slippers and your jail pajamas, and you bend over and spread your cheeks and lift your nutsack so they can check you're not smuggling anything in. And then they lock you up in the solitary cell, because at the time it was in the middle of the COVID scare and everybody going into jail had to be in isolation in case they brought COVID into the jail. Newsflash, it was already everywhere. So I was in a solitary confinement cell in Canberra, which is about the size of an ensuite bathroom, for 6 days and didn't get out. And whilst you're there, you've got no clock, nothing to read, you don't know what time it is. You allegedly have a whole series of rights. They give you a sheet that says what your rights are in jail, and that includes things like, I can ring my lawyer at any time. But you'd press the button on the wall and say, I want to speak to my lawyer, and they'd say, who's your lawyer? And I'd say, well, I need one. And they'd say, well, you've got to tell us who it is. I'm in Canberra. I don't live there. I don't have my phone. I don't have any phone numbers. I don't have a phone book. How the hell am I supposed to get a lawyer?
Yeah, exactly.
And that was half the time when they even answered the buzzer. The other half of the time you'd say, I need to phone my lawyer, and they'd say, the phones aren't working. And I'd say, why not? And they'd say, well, it's because of COVID. I'm not making this. Where's Johnny Lada? I'm not making this shit up.
No, I've been through all this shit, so I know you're talking the truth. I know what it's like.
Cut you off, they completely bastardise you. You know, I can see why young Aboriginal kids commit suicide in the cells when they're put through isolation and bastardry, and they don't know what's going on. And in fact, only on the sixth day I got a bail hearing, because people outside I didn't even know had arranged legal representation. I actually got a was that you, Michael?
That wasn't me. I was the gopher for Danny.
Yeah.
My mate Danny. Danny was, that's how I met Danny. Danny used to work with Bruce on the helicopters. He has bionic hearing because he'd got King hit years ago. So he was the only person in the world, I think, with bionic ears who worked on the rescue helicopters.
Yeah, he was.
Amazing young man. Amazingly tough, amazingly brave. And he was going around this forming city of unvaccinated people who'd come there for freedom, going, is anybody here has got a following or anything? I need to get some attention to about my friend Dr. Bruce Pay. And that's how we all started getting to know each other. It's incredible time.
The community that was there, and you mentioned elsewhere, Michael, we've been to these massive protests. We haven't seen a single car burnt. We haven't seen a bottle broken. We haven't seen a rock thrown. We haven't seen anybody get hurt except the protesters who were assaulted by the police.
Yeah.
End of story. They were completely peaceful.
Mm.
Craig, yeah, you said you'd been through this too. I'll come back to Bruce in a sec when he does his court case, because I think that's another conversation. But you said you've been through this through too. So were you caught up in the Melbourne protests, or how you've been through it as well?
I lived in Melbourne, so everyone's been through that shit. Live in Melbourne, but I also went through quite a bit of rigmarole at work as well, because of all the liberties they were taking away from us, even at work.
That's amazing. So even at work, so the fear was getting into the police force as well.
Oh, totally. Like, you know, we had to wear masks in the office, and we, you know, they were always badgering you about getting the jabs and stuff like that. You know, you get into it, you get pulled into a meeting, and why haven't you had a jab, and blah, blah, blah. And eventually, I think you mentioned that the federal government employees weren't mandated. And we were very relieved that they weren't mandated. But to circumvent that, the commissioner, who's still the commissioner now, because he's been given another stint, he actually gave a commissioner's order that you will get the jabs, or you'll go on a charge, like a disciplinary charge, for not complying with the commissioner's order, and then you'll be sacked.
Yep. They did the same thing in medicine. Anybody who refused the injections got charged with gross dereliction of duty or gross misconduct or some such thing. Yep. So not only did they lose their jobs, they had on their record that, which would then be accessible if ever they try and get a job somewhere else.
Yeah. In my case,
go on.
Yeah. Sorry. In my case, they offered me, I say, you can either retire or you can go through this disciplinary process. And then I looked at it. And the only reason I retired is because I looked at it and I thought I could see that I could extend my time in the AFP, which gave me time to work it from home, to go through the exit process, which is couple of weeks work, so, and also that gave me a bit more money, so I wanted to hurt them for what they've done to me, so it didn't serve me to go through the disciplining process and getting sacked, because I wanted to hurt them as much as I could, so I retired. But I went through the I tried for a religious exemption and everything, and I delayed it as long as I could. So that was the best way to delay them the longest time.
Yep. And I did similarly. I had lots of leave, which I just ran out until it was gone. And in fact, during that period of leave, I finally managed to get a positive COVID test, because I've been trying to do that for ages to get an exemption. And that means that, you know, you can't work. So normally if you're on leave and you have sick leave, you turn your sick leave into leave. And I had 6 months sick leave just sitting in the bank. So I had a certificate from the South Australian government that says I was unfit to work for 14 days because I had a positive COVID test. I wasn't sick, mind you. And so I sent that into the pay office and said, I want to convert 2 weeks of my annual leave that I'm running out into sick leave.
As is all right,
Guess what the bastards did? They denied it on the basis that I would not have been fit to work anyway unless I was vaccinated.
Oh, my God.
How circular
is that?
That's
not even how that leave works.
Correct. But that's and did I want that fight? This is at the same time, you know, as I was fighting the AFP to stay out of jail. Did I want that fight as well? No.
No. But they owe you that money.
Isn't that atrocious,
Craig,
what we did?
That is atrocious.
Sorry, Craig, there's a question here. Before I answer that, I am going to say, though, that Cafe Lockdown has been under threat forever about getting shut down. But tonight, Cafe Lockdown is shut down. People are coming in everywhere saying it's been removed from Facebook. I believe it's still up there, but we don't have anyone watching on it. So this is, we have a police officer here who's 32 years on the job and you've served your country. We've got Dr. Bruce Pay here who's served his country as well and you know, numerous lives he's saved from his job. There's me, this homeless bum, and we're being heavily censored. Even Twitter today, I woke up and Twitter was blocked. I had to unblock it. Instagram's been blocked. I can't access Instagram. And there's a few Facebook pages. All these people that were watching, I'm not sure. I'll just give you a guess. So, we've got a big group. So we've got about 700-800 people watching. And they're actually actively going through the social medias trying to find us where they can watch. And all about just having a conversation about has something happened to the police force that the culture has changed so drastically that allowing them to have violence against the public is, you know, at least in the last 3 years, been approved. I mean, surely going back to those weapons, you said the high energy weapons, if they were used, do you think the police commissioner himself could make that decision, or would that have had to come from higher? And I'm already theorizing here. We're just trying to understand what happened. And do you think that came from higher up? You know, it's like the shooting in Melbourne. I can't believe a police commissioner said, shoot him. I really feel that such a huge incident must have come from much higher up.
Yeah, well, obviously it's come from higher up because the whole world doesn't work in concert.
Yeah.
Unless it's come from one source.
Yeah.
So it's come from one source and, you know, the globalists, basically. The globalists are controlling everything, and that's and including the police forces and the media.
So Craig, I was thinking exactly that as you started talking about that. Basically, the whole world rolled out the same four-point plan everywhere. Right. You know, it was masks, right, lockdowns, vaccines and social distancing, I think it was, everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, every single one of those could have been a yes-no decision. So you could have said, look, we'll do lockdowns, but we won't do masks, whatever. And yet every single place in the world ticked the same side of that question four times. Despite the fact that it went against what their established plans were and that there were serious scientific questions about all of it. So in Australia, for a long time, we couldn't even have a railway gauge that was the same in every state. We don't have football codes that are the same in every state. You know, make no mistake, what we saw was not random incompetence. It was directed malice. There is no way the whole world could have followed that template.
Exactly.
Just by incompetence, not a hope.
I don't even remember the meeting they had where they decided about vaccine passports and all this. I mean, where did that come from? You know, I remember the United Nations where they're all standing up and deciding. Suddenly here we are, you know.
I didn't vote.
And the news was the same from all around the world, from whether we've interviewed people in Iceland or Ireland, anywhere, you know. There's everywhere we've been, it was exactly the same, except for a few standouts, like I think it was Switzerland or Sweden. That stood out, but the deeper down, I mean, okay, you've got the WHO, you've got these leaders down, but getting further down, I'm just trying to find the question from that person. Yeah, actually, I'll ask that first. I don't know where it was. She wanted to know what was the discussion going on with your colleagues as this was being rolled out. Were they for it? Were they against it? Were they wondering what to do? You know, because they've got massive mortgages and how they're going to survive. What were the conversations going on with your colleagues, Craig?
Okay, well, I can answer on that fairly accurately because I put an email out to the whole of the Melbourne office, and it was a decision made by the Commissioner of Fair Work, you might remember it, where she made a judgment call on a woman who was being forced to have a flu vaccine. Right, and she said you can't mandate these vaccines, and I put that out, and I used the words medical apartheid, and whoa, geez, did that get reaction? Like I got half a dozen people you know, call me all the names under the sun via email. And then deathly silence for most people. And about 12 to 16 people initially responded in a good way, you know. And basically, it was a situation where, you know, they later made me pull the email down, and they said that the use of the word apartheid was offensive, and that's why I had to pull it down.
Yeah, I had that. Someone came back to me and says, I don't like your use of the word apartheid. You know, I said, well,
it's offensive,
call Webster's Dictionary and get them to change the meaning, because that's the meaning that I'm using, you know. And maybe get them to change a few other words you don't like while you're there, you know what I mean? It was really – the other interesting thing is, though, because I know this is probably silly to talk like this because it's like sort of airy-fairy, but you kind of think that the police officers have – three things really: serve the community, protect the community, but also, especially the males. And I'm not going to talk about the males because I've got a dick, so I'm just going to talk about males. So I'm trying to think, is basically to be role models for our young men. So when we have our young men growing up with all these things, and they see an image like, well, I have it here somewhere. Of the this, what are the young men supposed to think? They're told don't watch video games. Video games are making our men, our young men aggressive. But then they see this, you know, where they're really, really enjoying it. How? I just don't understand how we've got to there, because I just don't believe 10 years ago, I think there would have been an outrage even amongst the police force with that. And yet around the country, it became the norm.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but it did. And I'm trying to understand culturally how that shift changed and what was the driving force. Was it just fear? Fear of losing your mortgage, fear of getting sacked?
No.
Fear?
No. Michael, let me put a military perspective on that. So I did multiple trips overseas to, as I say, every shithole that the ADF got sent. And I went to all these places because I was a doctor and they were valuable and you got a gig on every deployment. But for many of the regular soldiers, the infantry in particular, if they got one big overseas trip in a career, that was a career defining moment. So they climbed over the bleeding bodies of their colleagues to get to go to Afghanistan as an air defense guard or infantry or whatever. And it was a huge thing because they're often young men, so they go away, you know, they're doing what they're trained for, they get to kick some butt, they get paid really well, and they come home, they buy a V8 Commodore. Now, at the same time as COVID was going down, I was a member of the Police Pistol Club, and that was before I got shown the door for publicising the fact that a senior sergeant of police had told me to pull my head in or things would happen over COVID. And when I was at the Police Pistol Club, I saw the same attitude. I saw all these, you know, muscled up young men who were getting their one war deployment for their career. So instead of them going to Afghanistan, you know, and living there for 6 months and kicking heads, the police in South Australia were going down to the border and living in a caravan park or a motel at border town. And they were manning the border and doing patrols up and down, and they were getting to kick butt too. So for many of the police I saw, this was their big war deployment. They got to be warriors, they got to be aggressive, and they got to kick heads. The only difference between these two things is that the Australian military was overseas supposedly doing it to our enemies, and the Australian police were at home doing it to the Australian citizens. And that's the difference. You noted that every police force in the world has got protect and serve somewhere in their motto or their badges, but it doesn't say who. And what we've now learned is they're not there to protect and serve the citizens. They're there to protect and serve the government, and they do. And if they're ordered to do it, hash conformity experiment. If they're told they'll do it because they like kicking heads. And if it means grandma ends up in her back with a subdural hematoma from hitting the deck and a face full of taser or rubber bullet or pepper spray, that's fine because, you know, she was a dirty Jew. Yep, I'll get done for that. Dirty unvaxxed Jew.
Hey, we're already being censored. We can't do anything else. Craig.
She was a less than human, I think, was more appropriately. Yeah.
Do you agree with what Bruce said, though, Craig?
Yeah. Yes, totally. Yeah, totally. Well, on that, where you're saying the police were doing their deployment to the borders, well, they're actually jurisdictional limitations. They're not borders within Australia. Australia doesn't have borders. Mm. We have a border in the ocean. That's it. We don't have borders between states. That's a jurisdictional limitation. So it's all BS. But we do get to do peacekeeping roles. So that's East Timor. So that's Untayet and Umistet. So as a peacekeeper, yep. I was there in that role as well.
As was I. We're talking Dili or Moliana?
Dili, and I did go to the border at one stage to when there was a riot. We helicoptered in with our we trained the special police unit, and they had all their riot gear on, and we quelled the riot. But basically, a riot is over there is you get one village wanting to burn down the other village. And that's pretty much, and they use fire, machetes, and spears and bows and arrows, basically.
Can I go back though? When you were over there, are you allowed to sort of go nuts, or do you feel that you're representing your country as well?
We both went what? Very strict rules. Very strict rules of engagement.
Very strict rules.
But yeah. One thing I will say about East Timor is that it was a real eye opener for me, for in a lot of ways, because I found out what a beast the UN was.
Yeah.
But other than that, it felt quite free. You know, it was it was freer than Australia. It was like a bit like the Wild West for me.
Yeah. No government.
Because you know, I had a lot more control over what I could do and what decisions I could make.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another question here. One of the big things, there's a few things that we haven't been able to ask police officers. I have interviewed a few, but the other thing was you were in Melbourne and they had, I remember, this was before the vaccines came out. There was still a lot of fear around. No one knew what was going on. They had a Black Lives Matter march that was given the green light.
Yep.
And the police actually got on their knees and said that they would never do violence against the people again. And then a few weeks later, they were shooting us. How did that feel as a police officer to watch that?
Well, BLM is a terrorist organisation, and they don't care about black lives. Full stop.
No, it's all come out.
So I just see that as woke and very disappointing. You know, very disappointing.
Yeah. Well, the other thing in too, and this was a question I'm asking, I mean, not that you probably answer this, but I know somewhere in Australia, I think it's South Australia or somewhere, one police officer is now identifying as is it a tiger or a cat or something, and they're coming through now? Because I was wondering when they arrest you, whether they're allowed to use their claws since...
Well, I've never seen a tiger or a cat in a police environment, but maybe that's because I'm you know, a dinosaur. You know, I haven't.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's you should. I urge you to come see my play. One of the lines in Maroon, just the guy says, "I'm a living dinosaur." You know.
Yeah.
And stuff like this, but no, hats off. But moving on though, there's one other question. There's a famous shot that we took. I'll bring it up, and you've probably seen it. But what we're interested in is where is this team from? And so this is them. This was on the streets of Melbourne on the morning of the shrine. One of these bastards shot me, but they didn't just shoot me. They were shooting everybody randomly. There was no looking at papers. There was no anything. They were just shooting people. And this mother here jumped on the young guy next to me. And I swear to God, I still hope he's okay because he went down like a ton of bricks. But what is it? Who are these guys, or what is this team? And how do they justify violence against? And we're not another race. We're their brothers and sisters.
Yeah,
you know, we're the parents, their grandparents. They were shooting at grandmothers. You know, their kids. How do they justify that in themselves? That's the burning question I'm more interested in as a human being, not just an officer.
Well, firstly, I don't recognise that uniform. So it's
okay, Vic Bowl, that's interesting.
Is that in Victoria?
Yeah, this is it. This is in King Street, Victoria. Yeah.
But what you've got to understand is they've formed new squads to do certain roles, and one of these squads is to suppress Bruno, I guess.
Wow. So they've actually found police officers who would sit there in an interview and go, "We want to use you to suppress freedom," and they go, "Yeah."
Great. Well, they don't say it that way. It's to suppress these bloody protesters. That's what they say, but it basically to suppress freedom. Yeah.
God, it's such a...
To give you an example, I was once in the office on the third floor in Latrobe Street, and this is not long before I was forcibly removed. There was a protest going past, and they were freedom protesters, you know, freedom placards. And there were a group of people on the corner having a look over at them, and they're going, "Oh, those bloody protesters," you know. And I just walked up to them and I said, "Are you guys for real? These guys are protesting for freedom, your freedom, and you're having a go at them? You should be ashamed." And I said that really loud, and I had stunned silence. No one replied to me. No one said boo. And a week later, a sergeant who was in that group came up to me and says, "Boz, you know, I felt embarrassed, actually. You were 100% right there."
Yeah, well, that was like in New Zealand, where the protesters were an essential part in getting the police, the mandates dropped for the police over there. And then literally the next day the police went and brutalized the very protesters who had helped them escape the mandates.
Amazing.
And brutal, and was brutal. You know, we've interviewed people that were there. It was just, that's the thing that I worry about culturally is that the division, that somehow the propaganda machine was so effective that it suddenly allowed those who should be protecting us to just bounce on our heads. You know, I have an interview going up with a man, it's Mario Giuseppe, who was sitting next to me on the shrine steps. So I did an interview with him the other day. That'll go up soon. And he talks about how brutal they were with him, even though he was making it clear that he was 60, he has an injured arm, and they just didn't care. They just wanted to hurt him, you know, which I just don't understand, and the special thing is when you look at the Black Lives Matter march, they didn't do anything to those people. They didn't pepper spray them, nothing. You know, there's
You'll notice what they did very cleverly. Not only did they manage through propaganda and orders to get 95% of the people who should have protected us to instead tyrannize us. So that was most of the medical profession. It was most of the police, most of the military. You know, you pick a profession that was meant to protect us. None of them did. So not only did they convince the great majority of them to act unethically, they got the ones who were not prepared to do that to self-identify, and they eliminated them for next time.
Correct.
So the medical profession is now full of Nazi doctors who'll just follow orders, as is the police, as is the military, as are the courts. It was very clever.
One person asked a question also about pride flags. They even introduced in the AFP on our AFP computers, like a starting page where there was a pride flag in the background, and they sent pride emails and things like that. So it's just programming. It's just normalizing it and programming it. But the way I look at it, if you look at the chevron on the pride flag, people who are gay should be against that flag because the chevron has the light blue and the light pink in it, and that is not in their benefit. They are, that is a pedophile insertion into the pride flag. So if they want to support pedophiles, we will hate them. So they should hate it as well.
I've just got a question. Yeah, I have. We did have a guy working for us, Ryan. He was Gays Against Groomers, and a lot of the gay population have issue with the alphabet people because they feel that all the gains they made in being accepted in the community are now pushing them back. You know what I mean? And it's Now, this here, Happy Travels here. They did not use LRADs on the 12th of February. They used multi-grade ADS, access denial systems, microwaves, not sound waves. I have heard this too, but we're
That would make sense because of the injuries.
LRADs are acoustic devices, not...
Yeah, well, that's right. So we just get told things because we're told that from the police commissioner, who's obviously been given another tenure, this was true, and the injuries are, there's one man in Kerrang, he was associated with the Billboard Battalion. I took a photo of him and talked to him in Canberra. He was red all the way through, even though he had layers on, he was really burnt all the way through, and he died. And he was adamant towards the end that his injuries were sustained from these things. And I've met other people. They said these are the stories. They were driving home and they literally had to pull over. They was too sick to drive. They were just sick in their cars. And this is what I'm saying. There's out there, and you can blame the police commissioner if he said it. I don't know. We went there. You can blame all the way up. But eventually there's one police officer holding one of these machines, aiming it at his brothers and sisters and pressing fire or whatever the button is. And I mean, we've got a little girl that was burnt. These are little girls. It was like in Melbourne.
It's disgusting.
One of the first atrocities that's forgotten about. This is forgotten about because Matt Lawson got shot that day. But there was an 11-year-old boy that walked up to the police with a sign that said, "Let the children play." And they pepper sprayed him. And they covered him in pepper spray. 11 years old, you know. I've never seen him interviewed, but I've seen the images. And that was sort of brought the shock home to people going, what? But this is...
Well, so you don't even do that. So if let's like, notwithstanding, they shouldn't be spraying an 11-year-old unless he's a threat to someone. But with pepper spray is you only use a small amount and a short burst. And it is more effective if you saturate someone with pepper spray. It's less effective. So that goes against their training too. Because I was a use of force instructor and a firearms instructor.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're actually going against their training. They're just bastardized. They're just being bastards or bitches, really. They're just being violent.
If they've soaked someone with a spray, that's not how you train. It's not even effective. You're meant to just spray, short burst, and then when the air gets to it, then it burns. That's how it works.
Because I've met so many people that say they were sprayed in their eyes. They could actually see the nozzle, like here. I've interviewed several people, and we have recorded interviews of that too. And the other thing too, before we go on to what I want to talk about, I want to get back to Bruce and his trial. Tell them about what happened in the trial, Bruce, because this is astonishing.
Yeah, so after the best part of a year, I got to trial in Canberra, and it was a three-day affair. And I had tape that Danny, who we spoke about, had recorded from inside my vehicle of the AFP officer coming up to my window and admitting that I didn't strike the road worker that I was later charged with striking. You know, he said, "You nearly hit that man. I was just there. I saw you. You nearly ran him over." Now, nearly means I didn't. And I didn't nearly run him over. He punched my vehicle. But I've got the police confessing at the moment that they come up to my vehicle of what happened. And I said to my lawyer, "What the hell? I've got this piece of a vision that just destroys the whole police case. Why the hell are we, you know, got a 3-day trial in Canberra when it's going to fall over at the first hurdle? Can't you just contact them and say, hey, look, drop it because I've got this?" And he said to them, "No," he said, "absolutely not." He said, your arrest and your charges are clearly political. They're going to go ahead regardless. And if you give them knowledge of what your defence is, that just gives them a few months to come up with a counter story. So instead, we'll ambush them with it in court." And that's what we did. So the way courts work is that the prosecution goes first and they put all their witnesses up, and then the defence goes. That's me. So we had three sworn AFP officers, one after another, tell exactly the same story. They'd all seen me drive at high speed into a crowd in my Land Rover, Land Cruiser, bouncing up and down. It was going so fast with a loudly revving engine, and lurch forward and strike this poor road worker. It was almost word for word, the three AFP officers. And then as each one told the story, they then got cross-examined by my lawyer. He said, "Well, just let me show you a piece of vision and ask your opinion on it." And they show the policeman coming up to my window and saying, you know, nearly. And they also showed a bit of a scene sweep, which shows a real crowd, no vehicles moving, no traffic control devices. And they'd all described where all the cones were and all the signs and all the flashing lights. So I had vision of them admitting that I didn't do it, and of the scene showing that none of what they said was present was present. And so three in a row gave exactly the same story. And I had video that showed it was all bunkum. And the reason they were able to make up and collude on that story is because they forgot we'd filmed it. But it was, of course, on their body cams. But here's the funny thing. Despite me twice filming them and saying, "Are you filming me?" And them saying, yeah, I've got you on the body cam. And I said, "Well, I need you to keep that because I'm going to call for that in my defence." And twice they said, yep, no problem. We got to court and my lawyer said, "Can we see your body cam film?" And the police sergeant, he looked a bit uncomfortable and squirmed a bit, and he said, "Yeah, funny thing is, when I got back to the station, I discovered it was flat." At which point I just said, "Oh, bullshit," which prompted the magistrate to direct my lawyer to calm down her client. But, you know, they clearly lied. They forgot that I had vision that showed them lying, and I three times in a row got to show them all lying. And when I was found not guilty on all counts, the judge was pretty scathing on that. She noted that the AFP presented three closely correlated stories. She said, however, the defence presented video evidence that those stories could not be true. And this is the career-ending move for all those AFP officers. She then looked at them and she said, "I find this curious." So, I mean, that's more than enough punishment.
But I bet you it wasn't career ending. I bet you.
Oh, no.
Because these days, nothing matters.
That's where I think to get to here now, because we've got two men here that have integrity. That's what you did when you told them off for putting down protesters. And we have Dr. Pay here. And to me, it's like, how do we get back that we're valuing integrity? Because our society does better when the majority of people are good, decent people who actually stand for something meaningful. And at the moment, this is how we seem to be lost. Like, even now, instead of the government, you know, obviously the government's behind blocking cafe lockdown tonight, so there's zero on cafe lockdown Facebook page. They're on other Facebook pages, but that we're being censored. Bruce has been arrested. They still haven't paid the court costs. I think that he's still working through that. I just can't understand why they can't just go. And I know this is crazy, but I just can't understand the police officers themselves. And there must be some watching tonight. You have such power, and yet you act as though you have no power, as though you're slaves to a greater bully and you're just going to do what they say and throw away our country with it, you know? Yeah. So if you are doing this to just protect your mortgage, as the shrine is built on the blood of those who fought and died for freedom, your mortgage is built on the destruction of what your grandfathers fought for.
And your children are going to get.
Living on a cesspit of democracy.
You are destroying your children's future for your present. You know, I don't want my kids growing up in an Australia where that can happen again.
No. I just want to show you this picture I took. I don't show it often, but this picture, and I took this picture when we first got to Canberra. Can you stop the comments for a second? There.
Yeah.
Now, my thing is, this is where we were, and the little girls who are confused because they should automatically think there's a police officer, I'm safe.
Yep.
I'm safe. I can. And
not anymore.
No, not anymore. I don't feel safe in the presence of police anymore.
No. Well, the thing is, you can't take it for granted. You hope the police officer is going to be okay. You know, I haven't had any much instance with cops lately since I got arrested in Sydney recently, but there's basically, you know, are you going to get a good one or are you going to get a bad one? Yeah. Is it going to be aggressive? Is it going to be not? And so it's like touch and go, where before you would take it for granted, taking it for granted, that was fine. You'd be fine. You know, these are officers, and we basically in Australia have a decent police force to the majority. You have a few rotten ones, then we make mini series out of them and we all sit back and watch it, and we watch the Underbelly series. But the majority are fairly decent people. And I know when we had an 832 gathering in Edenhope, the police officer was coming through like every 2 hours, as though we were a group of like drug dealers or even, you know, just fanatics setting ready to burn the country. And we were just people hanging out in a caravan park, having a good time. And a guy that had been in the Air Force, Richard Ford, because the police officer finally sat across from us watching us, and he said he couldn't take it. I'm going to talk to him. And he ran across the field towards him, and he told me halfway there he was terrified because he wasn't sure how the officer would react. And this is where we are now. That fear is where we are. Instead of the fear of the criminals, we got a fear of the force. But when he got there, he said the guy was just a decent guy. He was the only cop in town, and obviously he was under a lot of pressure. But this is it. For the next part of this conversation is how do you think, Craig, as an educator of the police, what you've been, how do we get back that the Australian police in every state regain a strong moral code, and that we never see images like police officers pushing over old ladies, no matter what the old lady has done, again? How do we get back there?
Well, it's fairly easy. At the moment, police forces are corporatized. So their bosses are probably international in reality. So they're basically privateers. So privateers will never do their job properly. So until we get back to, you know, common law and Commonwealth law and the Constitution, we're going to have these problems. Because they're working for an agenda. So they're not working for Australian people. They're working for an international agenda. That's what they're doing. And that's why they're violent and they're out of control.
Do you despair for What was your profession in your country?
Sorry?
Do you despair for what was your occupation, you know, the police force, and for your country?
Definitely. The whole world is in trouble. It's going to get worse before it gets better. But the whole world is in trouble. And Melbourne in particular.
but here's the bright light for all of that. Just as our government got all the ethical police and doctors to self-identify and eliminated them, it also got all our false friends to self-identify to us. So yes. I now have far fewer people in my circle. That includes quite a few of my family, almost all of my work colleagues. But I tell you what, my circle is much smaller now, but it's much denser. You know, I have excellent relationships with my neighbours on both sides, you know, my children, and my wife, because they've stood by me. In fact, while I was in jail in Canberra, my daughter drove back and forth from Melbourne to Canberra twice in 7 days, sleeping in her car, scared she was going to get attacked in a truck stop at night. And they wouldn't even let her pass a message when she came to the jail. Like, I was cut off in the jail for 6 days. I didn't know that there was hundreds of people ringing the jail doing welfare checks, and there was people hanging around the jail and the courts in Canberra. They told me none of that. I have absolutely no contact. And, in fact, they said nobody called.
Yeah, because they put you in quarantine on purpose, so you couldn't have that interaction. And that isolation that you received is a torture method.
It's a weapon, that's right. Yeah. But as a result, I'm so much closer to the people who stood by me because I know they're valuable. And, you know, just as I'm really close to people I did military deployments with and got mortared and rocketed and all the nasty things that can happen to you in a war zone, those people are your true brothers. And I was saying to Michael earlier in the day, I now call a small number of people. I go up to them, I hug them, and I call them brother, and none of them is my brother. They're all people I've been in the trenches with over COVID, and I know that's incredibly valuable to have that relationship.
Yeah. Relationships formed under oppression. It's an extraordinary time, you know, that and almost like now cafe lockdown, we don't, even the senses, we don't think we're waking people up anymore. More, we're trying to keep the tribe and doing our bit, because the tribe's much bigger than cafe lockdown. We're trying to keep the tribe sane and going, you're not going mad. What you're seeing is real. You know, no one might be talking about it, but we are in a really strange place. And this happened today, which I don't know if the mainstream will go with it, but just watch this. This is, there's two things I actually want to show you. See, watch this first.
Soldier on, like they
say. Are you still being
vaccinated
for COVID?
No. When did you stop doing that?
About 2 years ago. I had 3 vaccines and that's been enough for me.
Any reason why?
Because I don't think I need any more, Ben, and the science tells me that I don't.
I'm with you.
So that's the guy that pushed it. So you're wondering whether that's going to change. But I wanted to bring up this.
But you know, the serious challenge that's posed by anti-vaxxers, and I think we need to strategize to really push back, because vaccines work. Vaccines affect adults. And we have science, evidence on our side. I think it's time to be more aggressive in pushing back on anti-vaxxers. I think they use COVID as an opportunity and, you know, all the havoc they're creating. Maybe that's one of the messages also I would like to include to whatever I have.
Anyway, how is that not a declaration of war against anyone who questions the narrative?
Yeah, it's World War III, the war against humanity, totally, 100%. We're in a war right now.
Yep. I noticed that early on, and all the signs were there. So we actually had a 3-star general running the COVID response. Did you know that?
Wow, no. Was that the guy that said he was came out, the bald head, the big guy that said they were going to come?
General Frewin ran it. We had military on the borders. We had identity checks. We had curfews. You name it. If you didn't work it out, you know, at the start of 2020, we were at war, and you only had to look at who the weapons were being directed against. The government went to war with the people, and 95% plus of them collaborated, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, put it this way, heavy censorship and heavy propaganda only occurs during wartime, only.
Military grade.
So disinformation bill, you know, all this sort of crap, it's all...
And citizens got locked up for resisting the war effort.
I just want to play one more clip, and this is not so much about the facts, but about the decisions people make and how they see themselves within the novel of their own life. I found this on Instagram, but...
So you watched The Hunger Games and you sided with the resistance. You watched Star Wars and you sided with the resistance. You watched The Matrix and you understood and sided with the resistance. You watched the movie Divergent and you sided with the resistance. You watched V for Vendetta and you cheered on the resistance. When it's fiction, you understand and you side with the resistance. Yet when it's happening to you in real life, right now, in the news, in the world, right now, you refuse to see it when it's the reality that you are living in. You're afraid to resist.
100%, yeah.
Yep, 100%. If it's ever a good
question, isn't it? You know?
Yep. If ever you wondered how the Nazis did it, look around you, now you know.
Yeah, they actually use it with, they disseminated propaganda through radios, and they gave a radio to every citizen, and that's how they got their propaganda out.
Yep, wow. They identified the enemy. It was the dirty Jews. They blamed them for everything.
Yeah, us.
Correct.
Yeah, that's it.
We're the dirty Jews,
As did Tedros. So you identify the cause, you make people very anxious, then you offer them the solution, or in the Nazi case, the final solution. So lucky I'm not registered anymore, because I was accused of being anti-Semitic for pointing out all of these parallels. How's that anti-Semitic?
It's true. I had that from the beginning. People were attacking me early on, like savagely attacking me. You know, that.
Now that the Israeli-Palestine war, there's lots of atrocities, so they're not saying that so much now.
Is there anything else you'd like to bring up, Craig, while you're here tonight?
Only that. You mentioned before, why do police do what they do and so on? Mm. Well, we're all called sworn officers. So to carry a weapon, to be able to act in the community, face-to-face, carrying weapons and so on, you have to be a sworn officer. And the swearing-in process, I can tell you now, when I swore in, I swore in to serve and protect, you know, the Australian people and whatever, and it was connected to the Queen Elizabeth and her heirs, basically.
Yep, yep.
And that was, when I was sworn in, that's what it was. And I'm still a sworn officer right now. Even though I'm retired, I'm still sworn.
Wow, okay. Yep.
Yeah.
How much did that mean to you when you did the pledge? How much did that mean to you as a man when you were giving that oath, pledging that oath?
A big deal, because, you know, it's dangerous work. It can be dangerous work, you know.
Yep. I'm more interested on the protecting. So you actually feel like you're joining a force for good, is what I meant. Is that what it felt like?
Oh, definitely. Definitely, yeah.
And that's what we've lost.
Yeah. And that's, as I said, really, in the last 10 years, this insidious programming has been occurring. And that's the last 10 years is where I've least enjoyed the job, and I wanted to leave. So when they gave me the nudge in the end, not that I let them know, I actually wanted to leave.
And you know what? Medicine was the same. You know, the last 10 years of medicine, I just got tired of broken, entitled, dependent people who just destroyed their lives and their health and then wanted it fixed, you know, as quickly as possible. You know, fix me up now, asshole, and stop wasting my time was the entitled attitude at the end. And that's what's wrong with Australia. That's what's wrong with the world. You know, the Australia is sick. It is very, very sick. Mm-hmm. And the illness is government, and government is a cancer. And it grows and grows and spreads until it infects everything.
Actually, it's a virus.
It's an ideological virus. Virus. That's how I see it.
That's a real virus. That's a real
thing. Yeah, it is. And people can't
it's a mind
question
virus.
Tell you the truth. I approached a theatre today. I've been writing. I'm writing this new play because that's what I do. About three young men adrift on the ocean, and it's about how they get. I won't say how, but it's a rite of passage play of boys becoming men. But at one point, where I was writing it today, they're having a conversation of do they want to go back. Because they feel like there's no worth for them here. You know, that basically if they come back, there's no jobs, they can't get houses, they've got to pay the debt for the generation before them, so that the generation before them partied, and they're going to end up with the bill. There's shame everywhere. They're shamed because they're male. They're shamed because they're straight. They're shamed because they're white. And they're shamed because they're Australian. And this is all this shame is being pushed by the education system, by the government, everywhere. This is insane. And this is an attack on our young men. And the gentleman I talked to said, I friggin' love it, but I'm not sure we can put it on here because there's woke people in the theater and they won't allow it. So we can't even consider backing a play which celebrates the beauty of our young men. That's where we are.
Yep.
This is where we are. This is how unhealthy we are. And courage is the only cure. As when you were on that balcony, called it out, Craig, that's the cure. And it silences everybody because they know that their souls are sick. Yep. They're infected with fear. Cowardice that comes with it, and fear gives you nothing. It just takes everything you love about the world around you, your culture, and yourself. You know, so as you say yourself to people in the freedom movement, a lot of us are becoming economically destitute, but we have no integrity. We know where we stand.
Yep.
We have brothers now.
Yes,
we have family. Unlike any family I've ever experienced in my life. I have people in my life now I die for, and we did not come from the same womb. We did. But that's what we do.
As you said, you know, it's more about the people that you are talking with now. And where we met was at that Tuesday night group that I go to, and that's the Gordon Collective. And no, they like
thanks to them for having me there. That was really lovely.
It was great having you. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, we have one more question here that from Maria Bottrell. Thanks, Maria. And she's going, do you have any knowledge at all about the camps that they built? Because now that we see Tedros saying that, and the World Health Organization, apparently 192 countries that have agreed to arrest anyone who won't get vaccinated for the avian flu. I also saw something from America today. A chicken farmer talking about how they're basically going through and just burning all the chickens everywhere. These wellness camps, did you hear any intel on those before you left?
Well, I would call them quarantine camps.
Yeah.
But they were built on the excuse that it was for quarantine. But in reality, people like three of us have just posted this video, we'd be sent to one for putting out disinformation and misinformation. That's what they're for.
So sent to the gulags.
For a future use.
Is there any sort of historical precedent for sending dissidents to gulags or camps that you can think of?
Russia, communist Russia did it.
Solzhenitsyn, Hitler, Pol Pot, China, Mao. Yep.
Yeah.
No, I can't think of one either.
Yeah, and communist countries, and remember, Nazi was socialist, which is the same brand. They are guilty of killing more people in history than anyone else.
Correct.
That's right.
And that's why imprisonment.
That Fair Work Commissioner who made the judgment. That was the first time I'd heard the term. She was stood down for re-education.
Yes.
That's the one.
Yeah, a doctor in Perth who did an interview on Cafe Locked Out with Scotty over in Perth. That doctor now, APRA is allowing him to come back, but he has to have a doctor sitting with him constantly, and he's going through a re-education process.
Yes, she gets re-educated because she was a brave woman who was smart enough to see through all the bullshit.
Yeah, and brave enough to speak it out. But I'll tell you something else. Everyone is listening because, I mean, most of the people listening are our tribe, but there might be some of the others that are not. Something beautiful about the Melbourne Freedom Group when all the big protests were happening. In that time, the camps were being built and we joked about it. It didn't stop us coming. There was some people holding up signs going, you need a bigger camp. And most of us were going, I want the top bunk. Even I won't say his name because he doesn't want to be known anymore, but the young man who played the violin with the Australian National Anthem that we never sung it was just silent. I said to him, could you make the National Anthem sound like it was being played in a gulag and it had a broken heart? And that's what, at half an hour, I never thought I'd hear from him again. Half an hour later, he calls me up and goes, listen to this. And that's what I said, okay, because my theatrical background producer, I said, I'm going to get you in this. I'll get everyone to shut the fuck up. I'll get them all to raise their phones and we'll reach it out like a warning for Australia. And it did spread everywhere, but it changed nothing. This is where we are. I think we're in a place now where every single Australian has to look at what they value in their lives. If we're going into harder times, what do you value? Because the quality of your children or your grandchildren's liberty will depend on your answer to that question and what
exactly.
That's it. Yeah. I thank you for coming on, Craig. I was very excited when you told me what you did. I admire your fortitude and your courage. I'm sorry the country's this way. And Bruce, you're just a brother, so I'm actually looking forward to coming and hanging out again and seeing this. So Kelly's celebrating.
Hi, Kelly. Push Michael out the way.
Good to meet you, Bruce.
Likewise, Craig.
She's over here on the comments.
How are you, darling?
But here's where we are. Now we're going to go out. The thing I played at the start was the top 10 culture songs, and that's for sale now on the USB. And these are the artists who don't care. They're going to write about what they write about. They're not caring about the consequences. So that's on Twitter and other things, but you can't share it. Even Twitter, they tried to share it. You can't share it. So maybe find it on Rumble. But we're going on about, I think, the Thin Blue Line. This is a song from Matt Finlay. I added some extra video to it from the footage from our archive. But this is a song that's not putting the police down as trying to reach out to them. Because what happened in Victoria with Dan Andrews The only reason that got passed and the only reason we had to put up with all that brutality was police officers allowed it to happen. They allowed it to happen. If they'd actually, as Craig Backman was trying to call him, if they'd stood down and go, nah, Dan, we can't do this, goes against the Constitution, goes against just being fucking Australian, to be honest, we're not doing it, we probably wouldn't even have this show tonight. We probably wouldn't even have this conversation. That's the power you have.
If the doctors said we're not doing it, it wouldn't happen, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like in our office. If 40% said no to the jab, it wouldn't have happened.
Absolutely.
I was so shocked that so many complied. Just so shocked.
Yeah, me too. And final, before we go, can I just have your thoughts for the public, Bruce, because of who you are? What are your thoughts on the fate of Dazzle?
Yeah, well, wasn't that atrocious? That was, for those who don't know, Dazzle passed away, what, a couple of days ago?
Yeah.
After a long struggle, central to which was she was denied medical treatment unless she took a vaccine. That's blackmail. That's against the Nuremberg Code. It is atrocious. It's criminal. And the fact that my profession would even go along with that for health, you know, für ihre Sicherheit, for your safety, for your health, it's a disgrace. And anybody who collaborated with that, you know, Craig, you said you couldn't believe how many people cooperated. The word is collaborated. Most of the Australian people, most of my profession, most of Craig's profession, when the government went to war with the people, most of the people were collaborators. They were not, as we saw, they didn't support the resistance. They supported the occupiers, not the resistance. Very sad. Very sad.
Craig, please stay in touch. Please stay in touch. If you have other things to do, please stay in touch. Any information you get or you want to come back on because you've got something new to share whilst we are still alive and active.
Hopefully we haven't bored too many people. It's fairly long.
We've got well over 1,000 people watching, regardless of the fact that they are squeezing us. So there must be like whack-a-mole. They go, what? We shut Cafe Lockout down. Where are these people watching them? And that's where we are. So Robin is coming back on pretty well live after this. Encourages the cure because we're going to do a piece about, I might join her because we are being heavily censored tonight. So this could be the end of Cafe Lockout, the actual Facebook page. Who knows? Craig?
And we're all there.
Yeah. And Bruce, I will see you soon down the path somewhere.
You will.
Take care. Thanks for a good show. This is Matt Finlay. Go to culture.com if you want to own this song or get hold of, or if you want a USB with the top 10 or Ben's album or Emily Jane's album, contact Cafe Lockout, gmail.com, and we'll organize it. Here we go. Thank you for a great show.
Evening.
I'm a soldier. I follow orders. I swore an oath to corporate headquarters. And I look out for me. To serve and protect, not the whole community, but my brothers in the fraternity. 'Cause I'm a soldier, I follow orders, protecting corrupt pedophiles holding up us, and I look out for me, and I look out for me. A line of cocaine just to cause I'm a soldier. I follow orders. I train to hurt people. You're old, your sons and daughters, and I look out for me. And I look out for me. It's all I've ever known. They would take my power away. I'd rather be a whip than a slave. Oh, cause I'm a soldier. I follow orders. I'm here. And I look out for me. And I